Hide your kids. Lock the doors. You're listening to HR's most dangerous podcast. Chad Soash and Joel Cheeseman are here to punch the recruiting industry right where it hurts. Complete with breaking news, brash opinion, and loads of snark. Buckle up, boys and girls. It's time for the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
I'm Chad Soash of the Chad and Cheese Podcast, joined by
Joel Cheeseman, the cheese segment of the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
Yeah, everybody can remember him. Jerry Crispin, the recruiting soothsayer. I came out, I think somebody's called you that before, but
I'm not about to call myself soothsayer
and sightseer.
I felt like a tiger of some sort.
Tiger Jerry King, Crispin, I like it.
Tiger King of recruiting crossroads. We have Deb Andertruck. She is the industry veteran and VP of, I said recruitment branding goodness. I feel like that is Deb and good recruiting branding.
That can be my, I'm going to change my business card to say that.
I like it. Over at Shaker Recruiting, Joel has a logo there to share. And last but never, but always least, Stephen Rothberg. Nobody can have a college recruiting discussion without Stephen Rothberg actually popping his head in. So
Stephen Rothberg, token Canadian. Welcome,
President. Steve. Founder, collegerecruiter.com. So the theme of today's discussion is protecting your brand in the realm of college recruiting. Stephen, this one's going to you, buddy.
Okay.
Are you ready?
As always.
How are employers protecting their brands and talent pipelines by adapting their internship programs?
Most of the large employers understand that their college recruiting programs, whether it's internships or new grads, are strategic. That's where their next generation of leaders come from. The small number who look on at interns as cheap sources of labor or basically temporary help are doing a terrible job of protecting their brands. Those are the ones where we're seeing the biggest layoffs. Small startups who brought in a bunch of interns because they've got a project that needs done, and they had no intention of converting those interns into, well, we have to come up with a better word, permanent hires. No hire is permanent. The vast majority of the large employers, and it's the large employers who hire most students and recent grads. That's where the bulk of that hiring comes from. The vast majority of them, I think, are really trying hard to do the right thing. They're trying to do the right thing, not just because it's they're trying to protect that student, that grad, and do the right thing for that person, but they're also being mindful of their own business. So by doing the right thing, you're doing the right thing for the candidate and you're doing the right thing for your business. If they were to turn around and rescind their offers, then they lose this year's class. And they're probably also going to lose next year's class and the class the year after. Because every one of those students that has an offer rescinded or just has the employer treat them like shit is going to tell 5,000 of their closest friends on Facebook, Twitter,
TikTok.
Oh, you stole my thunder, man. I was going to say there's going to be TikTok videos with people doing little dances talking about how they had their offer rescinded. And as disturbing as that would be with just the dance thing, to lay that over would be even worse. But word will spread very quickly. You'll have career service offices counseling students to not accept an offer from the terrible employer A and instead accept an offer from employer B. So these big brands, I think it took them a couple of weeks to grasp the monumental problem that they faced. They have a huge cash flow problem. They have a huge problem in adapting the work so that these people can do meaningful work from home. But I feel like they almost all realized they needed to do it. And I've actually been really amazed pleasantly at how unusual it is when we hear of big brands not doing it. Like, they almost all are rising to the occasion. It's been very encouraging. It's been very collaborative.
Jerry, one of the things with my military background, I've the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, always amazing recruitment, right? The process might not be great, but amazing recruitment. One thing I can't understand from companies is why they haven't started their ROTC programs, the Reserve Officer Training Corps types of programs, where they put them in and say, look, you're a recruit, you're coming in, you're going to be a developer at my organization. We're going to stick with you through these years, whatever it takes, but your hours, and we're going to pay for tuition or whatever that is. Why haven't companies adapted to be more advanced? Because that is advanced, and that is true pipelining.
It's a long time since I've heard ideas like that, to be honest with you. Probably 20, 30 years, which is really what happened about 20 or 30 years ago, was we stopped developing people. We want to hire people who can work today.
Right.
And so the intern program is really the closest thing we have to kind of job shadowing, but I get a chance to, you know, to see and to buy later on. What Stephen was talking about is not only do you lose the ability to get interns next year, if you screw up with the interns this year, that intern class that you have this year is actually where you get your early hires. So, you know, is financial services probably the biggest example of that. Nearly 90% of all of their early hires come from their intern classes, their own intern classes in many cases, not just their competitors' intern classes. So the impact of this pipeline, if you will, is really intern to early hire. The truth of it is, though, that some companies could be doing some extraordinary things if they brought people in and made some promises for a longer term capability of developing that. Now, there are examples of that. In fact, in the company, in the city that Dev is in, you've got Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And it's a great example of a company that a huge percentage of their total hires, it used to be almost 100%, basically come in at a single job at a, and I wouldn't call it early hire, because even if you retired and wanted to go work for Enterprise, that's the job you would get. And then from there, you can grow in a variety of different directions and from a development point of view. So they can show that if you look at any mid-level or C-level person, the majority of them all started in the same exact place, in a store where they learned how to deal with the business at its base level. That those kinds of models, though, are few and far between. And the majority of folks who do join companies from college often are gone within 2, 3, 4 years. Some companies probably should be doing an ROI on what is the value long term of bringing kids in that first job, because the investment in all of that doesn't really pay off for years. And so if companies did a better job of rethinking how they develop people for the long term, they'd realize that they've lost a little bit of that investment possibility. So you raise a really important question. Corporations have to think more in the future about buy versus build. And early career hire interns are part of the build decision strategically. And they should be thinking more long-term from that perspective.
Chad, you're kind of talking apprenticeships.
Yeah, to an extent. And I mean, we see this on the tech side more than we do anything else, but there's no reason why it can't be rolled over. And again, like an ROTC program where the college is being paid for. And when you pop out of college, you are now in a 3-year or 4-year contract to be a developer on this level. And during that time frame, you've gone through some training. So when you come out, you already know about that company. You've already been through training classes, probably certifications, corporate certifications, those types of things. And at the end of that, you have a paid degree, you have a brand that you're going into. And again, that's a true pipeline.
To me, most companies today are saying that they want to eliminate college degree as a requirement for a job, which offers a tremendous opportunity for a lot of people who've gotten good experience doing a lot of things, military,
yes,
Peace Corps, a lot of other kinds of things, to coming into corporations and then being part of a much bigger opportunity for apprenticeship and college and all of those things.
You say companies want to do that. What's stopping them?
It's a lot of talk. It's not enough walk is one thing. It's everything we do in change is very slow, and you have tremendous resistance to change. Mm-hmm. And the people who want to, who do the talking, also need to step up and take risks to push that point of view.
There's a large consumer packaged goods company that we all know that always has relied on new grads. And I don't know this for a fact, but just kind of watching them evolve over the last 5 or 10 years, we're starting to see this company start to lean more heavily on more experienced hires, right? And bringing in people from all different facets of work life. And I think it goes back to the fact that I think when you are cultivating talent, I mean, enterprise does it really, really well, but I think sometimes you can get into a situation where you end up churning out people that all are homogenous, right? We all look and talk and do everything the same. And inclusivity and diversity is so important right now. I think companies are starting to recognize that they need to start tapping different, you know, silos to bring in the right people. And also to stay ahead of the technology and just, you know, how quickly things are changing. I don't know that when you only have homegrown talent that you can always do that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think, though, we're talking about one piece of the pipeline, which is the kind of pseudo entry level, right? So you have the experienced recruiters and the C-level recruiters and so on and so forth. And everybody should be focused on and have goals and be transparent with regard to diversity, period. Whether it's veterans, individuals with disabilities, gender, doesn't matter, race. I mean, we should be more transparent. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why, my personal opinion, why we have pay inequity is because nobody knows what everybody's getting paid. So it's this moving, you know, so it's behind closed doors. If everybody knew, I believe we could actually start to bring those up to where they were level if we had transparency, but we don't.
And in the spirit of
this country, no.
In the spirit of sort of widening the net, I'm curious your thoughts. So one of the beautiful things about work from home is it scales pretty well from an educational standpoint, right? It doesn't matter how big the classroom is in some aspects. So in a work from home world, and I kind of assume we're at least going to start leaning that way after this period, do internship programs get larger with more interns? And if not, why not?
Interesting. I'm not sure if they would get larger because, like Jerry was alluding to earlier, the internship program by the companies who do them well is the source of new grad hiring. You know, if you're going to hire 200 people a year as new grads, you know, 175 of them probably came from your own internship program. So I think it's the size of the internship program is really driven by the number of new grads that you're looking to bring on. But a couple changes that I think we're going to see is I think it's going to, in some ways, level the playing field rural urban. If you live in a rural area, it's really, really hard to get an internship.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think it's going to increase the barriers socioeconomically. You have to have pretty damn good Wi-Fi in order to do an internship remotely. You have to have a good computer. You have to be in an area where high-speed internet is available, which one of the things we're finding out right now is geographically, the majority of the country really suffers from really, really poor internet access. And so people in remote areas, in rural areas, are just really hurting right now. They're not able to watch Netflix.
I understand the tech argument. If you were going fishing, wouldn't you rather fish in a lake with more fish than less fish, even if you had a quota that you needed to fill?
Yeah, so Yeah. And so I think from an employer's standpoint, there are pros and cons. From society's standpoint, there are pros and cons. So yes, if you're going to have a largely remote internship program, you can cast that net a lot wider. And I think that that gives you a greater opportunity to attract good talent. You know, if you're an employer in St. Louis, to stick a recruiter on an airplane and fly them up to Alaska is kind of challenging. From you know, a cost standpoint. But now you can hire that candidate in Alaska just as easily as you can hire the candidate in Kansas City. So that's going to help those people in Alaska. On the other hand, if you're in rural Alaska, you probably don't have good internet.
Yeah.
But you have good fishing.
Yeah, but you're going to be able to fish from a lot of places is the point, as yeah. opposed to the one place you've been going all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's – so we're going to see the potential for more diversity. And I say it potential because Stephen's point, I think, is really an important one, is that whether it's rural or whether it's from a socioeconomic point of view, I don't have a computer. I haven't paid the kind of money that gets me all of the Wi-Fi that I could be getting. Those companies are going to have to provide some kind of subsidy, just as they might subsidize where you live if you moved someplace as an intern. They're going to have to provide a subsidies to make sure that you have the proper technology or whatever else they need from a communication point of view. But I don't see any reason why that wouldn't happen and why the most companies would do that well. And
so you do think, Jerry, that internships could expand?
Like without a doubt. So okay. more companies might be able to do more internships in more places if they concentrate on a balance a virtual versus face-to-face kind of thing when we come out of this thing. And I believe that they're going to learn a hell of a lot this summer with the interns that came on in May or June, because typically that's when they're coming on. Mm-hmm. They're going to learn an awful lot about how to do that better. I suspect that they'll struggle a bit, but the projects, how long those projects should be, what the cost of all of those things should be. All of those things, I think, are going to provide them with the ability to build a business case for what percentage of our interns should be this way and what percentage should be another way. And I think the large companies will do that. I think, you know, there's still a lot of companies that, you know, in effect say to interns, you know, we're not going to pay you, right? We Yes. don't see that in large companies, but there's entire industries in advertising, if you will,
sure.
where unless you're wealthy enough to do the internship, you're not going to get it. And that's going to be more visible, I think, more and more as we build better opportunities for more and more people.
Yeah. Deb, where are you on that fence?
You know, part of me thinks that, yes, the classes could be bigger, or you know, if you're condensing the length of time, like I think maybe some of these online programs, you could shorten them potentially, just because you're making more efficient use of your time. But I also think it really depends on how long this lasts and how much damage it does to some of the companies that are out there. I was talking to an insurance company the other day, and they were saying, you know, we would really have liked to been able to rescind all of our offers and cancel because we're hurting, you know, people aren't paying their premiums. People are pulling money out of their 401ks and, you know, things are just not great. So I think it's all going to be dependent upon how long this lasts. And I still do think that, to Jerry's point, when you look at folks from a socioeconomic perspective, there definitely is going to be some imbalance. And I do think underrepresented, you know, groups of folks they're going to take the brunt of it. I mean, really, when you look at in the last recession, unemployment for African Americans was, I think, like 13.4%, something like that, more than double what unemployment for a new grad today is. So, I mean, we know it happens, and I'm just, that's the thing that I worry about the most is the inequities that are going to come out of this. It does concern me.
Well, and those inequities have been there. The thing is that this crisis is bubbling them up to the top, and they're making them larger. And I hope that we as a society start to care about that because they were there before. I hope this crisis actually moves us that way. But thanks once again for joining us, everybody. And everybody out there in TV land, don't forget, there are other segments in this discussion. Check them out. You can go to chadcheese.com. Check out Little Shaker, Little College Recruiter. Jerry, listen to some soothsaying of Jerry at Career Crossroads. We'll see you next time.
We out.
We out.
This has been the Chad and Cheese Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss a single show. And be sure to check out our sponsors because they make it all possible. For more, visit chadcheese.com. Oh yeah, you're welcome.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you, and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.